Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Okay, enter trumpets. Here's Dr. History.
That was a sad trumpet.
Listen, you pull the money out of your pocket and pay for it then.
All right. Okay. How you doing today, Zeb?
Oh,
I don't know if I should ask.
Not probably healthy to ask me.
Okay, all right.
No, well, I'm doing very well considering how bad I was yesterday, but how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Doing good.
Good.
Nice day out there today.
Beautiful day.
So it is.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today?
All right. We're going to talk about a stagecoach driver.
Driver. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, of all the stagecoach drivers who helped make the West truly wild, a guy by the name of Charlie Parkhurst. Now, I don't know if you've ever even heard of this guy.
I don't think I have.
Okay, he was kind of the most bizarre and fascinating. He was a rugged individual. He stood about 5'7", so not short, but not tall either. But he had kind of a weathered face and had one blue-gray eye. Okay.
One. Where was the other one?
The other one he lost while he was shoeing an ornery horse.
Oh. Okay.
Now, I don't know how he got his eye put out by an ornery horse that he's getting shod, but whatever.
It can happen.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, so he covered that with a black patch.
Okay.
So you got this picture. Here's a one-eyed pirate-looking guy.
Driving a
stagecoach.
Okay.
Okay, his tobacco-stained chin and lips were apparent, but he was beardless, never grew a beard.
You know, which leads one to think that maybe he drove alone, because riding shotgun, if the wind's coming out of the west, that guy's going to wear all the tobacco.
He could be. You know, and it says that he spoke in a whiskey tenor voice.
Oh.
Now, I can only imagine that. I know that tenor means a little bit higher.
Yeah.
That's a whiskey tenor, I don't know.
He drank a lot.
He must have done. So anyway, he was not himself a loud person or boisterous, you know. He didn't tell a lot of lengthy stories, but his legend grew as his passengers and acquaintances told and retold these hair-raising stories about the exploits of One-Eyed Charlie.
One-Eyed
Charlie.
Well, what did Charlie do?
Well, we're going to get to that. So Charlie's stage run took him to a rickety bridge one time over what is called the Tuolumne River, and once during a heavy rainstorm, he found the bridge was swaying in the swirling torrent of this rain-swollen river.
Now, this bridge had to be crossed by the stagecoach.
Yes, with six horses. Okay.
Wow.
Now, other drivers would have turned back at the sight, but Charlie cracked his whip, urged his six horses forward. He was halfway across when the rotting timbers creaked, popped, and collapsed. Charlie laid the whip to his team, and they lunged forward, and they barely reached the other side before the bridge tore loose and was swept down by the floodwaters.
What about, excuse me, the people inside the coach? Now,
okay.
First of all, I would like to say that I'm jumping.
Okay. Well, the story says his passengers were okay. They weren't hurt, but it says some of them fainted from fright.
What a laundry bill they had.
You know, I'd have been looking to jump.
Oh, baby.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Now, the robbers, the road agents, they soon learned that they couldn't count on robbing any stage that Charlie, One-Eyed Charlie, drove. Not if they valued their lives. Because shortly after Charlie began driving the Sierra stage routes, he was held up by a highwayman robber nicknamed Sugarfoot.
There was a TV series named after him. Remember that?
Yeah, I thought it was Sugar something.
No, Sugarfoot.
Okay.
And the star was Will Hutchins back in 1963.
Okay. Well, this guy was called Sugarfoot because he wore gunny sacks over his huge bare feet. For whatever reason, I don't know.
And so for that, they called him Sugarfoot?
Sure. Anyway, he had a shot-off shotgun, and he had with him, and he poked it at Charlie, and Charlie was mad as heck. And
Mad as heck.
That's and that's how he swore, mad as heck. And Charlie said, next time, I'm going to be ready for you.
Well, wait a minute. Doesn't it make a lot of sense? We talked about this in the past. These robbers, they would step out in front of a train, and then they would say, stop the train, I'm going to rob you. step on the tracks right. in front of a train. Well, the same is true for these guys
okay,
in the stagecoach.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So,
I'm worried.
Anyway, so One-Eyed Charlie said, next time I'll be ready for you.
Yeah.
And he meant business.
Uh-huh.
Well, from then on, he carried a six-shooter. And on his next run-in with Sugarfoot, about a year later, Charlie stampeded the coach horses toward the thieves, drew his pistol, killed Sugarfoot, and gave two other of the gang members some bullet wounds in memory of their robbery.
So Charlie basically endangered his passengers with a liberal thought of today and jumped the stagecoach off the trail and shot the bad guys.
Well, it doesn't say he jumped off the trail. I think he was right. I think they were right in the middle of the road.
I think Charlie should run for president.
Anyway, there was no robbery. So, and Sugarfoot was now pushing up daisies.
His mudfoot.
That's right. Now, let's go back a little bit. Details of Charlie's early years are a little sketchy, which a lot of them were.
Okay.
Eastern born, he ran away from a Massachusetts orphanage when he was still a youngster and wound up in a place called Worcester. And there he found work as a stable boy for a guy named Ebenezer Balch. And he trained him to drive horse teams, buggies, coaches. And when Balch moved his operation to a hotel and livery stable in Providence, Rhode Island, young Charlie went along with him. He had no family, so orphan. And there he met a guy named Frank Stevens and Jim Birch. Now, they established a California stage line from San Francisco. So they wired Charlie an invitation to come west for a paying job and plenty of action. And so Charlie got on a ship and went down to Panama and got off the ship there, you know, which a lot of these people did. And then they crossed Panama and tried to catch a ship coming up the West Coast.
Wow. That took about 3 months, didn't
it? Oh, yeah.
It
depends on, you know, we've talked about that before. Sometimes they were there for a long time before another ship came up.
And Wally Wazuri wrote that song in a big Panama with a purple hat band.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was that tenor voice.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so he began driving for these guys out there on the West Coast. Now, in one accident, Charlie's stage capsized and left him with, quote, "my sides busted in." Now,
Must have broke his ribs.
That's what I'm going to guess. Yeah. And, you know, you've had busted ribs, so have I. And
so many times.
It's painful.
It hurts.
So, even so, Charlie took great pride in the fact that not one passenger on that trip or on any of his runs was ever injured. Nobody.
Really?
So
he drug that stage upside down, but nobody got hurt.
You know, Charlie was known to gamble a little, chew a little tobacco, and take a drink in a saloon with his buddies.
Yeah.
But he was very critical of drivers who would drink on duty. Did not appreciate that. And in fact said the smash-ups were generally due to whiskey or bad driving.
I see.
Now, also, and you're going to appreciate this, he referred to his horses as his beauties. And he loved his horses obsessively. And you and I both know cowboys, I mean, you get a good horse, and I mean, it's just...
Take care of them.
Oh, yeah. And nobody dared mistreat a horse in his presence.
Yep.
Because Charlie was known to more than hold his own in a fight.
So he was a little guy, but tough.
Yeah, 5'7", you know.
Yeah.
But despite the tales of Charlie's exciting driving, despite his, it says flamboyant attire, so he must have dressed kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
His repertoire of curses, which are darn and heck, you know.
Yeah, darn heck.
Yeah. And,
son of a gun.
And, you know, his friendliness away from the coach. Charlie was actually kind of a loner.
Really?
He had certain eccentricities. He confided in no one, and he preferred to bed down in the stable with his horses.
All of a sudden, I'm starting to realize where you're headed here.
Don't even go there yet,
Zeb.
Okay. Right. He bedded down in the stable with his horses, and he loved children. And for those at each stop, he'd bring gifts and stuff to give to these kids. Charlie never bathed in public in a bathhouse. Only privately or in a creek, out of sight. He never displayed much interest in chasing women, and he was known to take charitable actions on their behalf. He once bought a widow's house when the sheriff foreclosed on it, then gave it back to her.
Really?
Yeah. So Charlie was a very considerate, kind person.
I think I know where you're going.
He eventually drove all the main Sierra routes from Placerville to Virginia City, as well as the Rough and Ready to Sacramento and Stockton to Mariposa and all points in between. He later took the runs from Oakland and San Francisco to San Jose and on down to Monterey. So he covered a lot of territory in that California area.
Yep.
Well, rheumatism forced him to stop driving. He settled near Santa Cruz, opened a stage stop on the route to Watsonville. In 1867, he became a bona fide citizen by registering to vote. The record for November 3rd, 1868 listed him as Parkhurst Charles, age 55, occupation farmer, native New Hampshire.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Charlie's rheumatism worsened with his advancing age, and then he developed cancer of the tongue.
Chewed a lot of tobacco.
Yeah.
Spit it on the shotgun guard.
So he spent his final years in a cabin near Watsonville and refused medical help by threatening to blow the head off any doctor who came near. Okay.
Kind of a rough bedside man.
Yeah. Nobody'd want to make a house call there.
No.
Anyway, when death came to Charlie on December 28th, 1879,
I know where you're
it
going.
Revealed the truth behind his masquerade. A doctor who examined the body, then the news was that Charlie was a woman. And you saw that coming.
I saw it was like looming on the horizon.
Yeah. Well, and you can imagine a reputation, okay? And this disclosure sent kind of a shockwave through California because Charlie had been all over the West.
So Charlie really was Charlene.
Well, it's down here. I'll get to it. Actually.
Oh.
Anyway, the newspapers picked up the story, and as they often do, they kind of embellished it with some of the outlandish speculation.
Yeah.
But the reactions of Charlie's friends and acquaintances went from stupefied to anger to puzzlement to, you know, if you're a friend of Charlie, you think, what the heck, Charlie? You know, you were my friend.
Yeah.
You know, I drank with you. Spit and chewed
with you. Well, there's a lot of things never mind.
Anyway, so it appears that Charlotte, a young woman left on her own in a male-dominated society, started her masquerade as a way to earn a decent living and then became either accustomed to it or maybe she was trapped in it. Because, again, had a reputation. So
one would think that perhaps one would find out prior to this.
I don't know. And I've got another story we're going to get to because we've got time.
All right.
Anyway, Charlie's legacy was a mystery and remains so to this day. Charlie's fellow lodge members so greatly respected, quote, him, that they insisted burial take place in the Odd Fellows Cemetery in Watsonville.
Odd Fellows, that's a good way to put it.
That is, isn't it? Anyway, fresh flowers were often left on the gravesite by those who revere the memory of the West's most unusual history maker, and get this, Zeb, the first registered woman voter in the United States.
Charlotte, pardon me.
So this is a historical day today.
Oh, it is. We're celebrating Charlotte, Charlie, Charlene.
Yeah, okay.
Now what are we going to talk about? Wait a minute, I tell you what. Go ahead, I'll do the commercial
later. Do we
have
time?
Yeah, go ahead. We got exactly 8 minutes.
Okay, I think we can get through this
one.
Okay, here we go. Now, this is Idaho history.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
And a lot of it's related to mining, you know, the Bunker Hill, the Vipont, a lot of legends, a lot of stories came out of here. But one of them was a guy named John Monahan.
John Monahan.
John, okay.
Why are you snickering?
I'm not.
You are too. You're lying. You're
okay.
Snickering.
All right, Joe. We're going to call him Joe. Came to Ruby City in Owyhee area, and the country was, it was about 1863, and yeah, Joe was kind of a small person.
Here we go.
A little bit of a high-pitched voice.
Oh, boy.
And a strange little man, small.
Why are you doing this on this program?
Well, we've gone down this road, and we just won't finish it, right?
We're at the end of the trail.
So, anyway, his mannerism and build were a little different, but his accomplishments were not. Little Joe, as he was known, was a good cowboy. He could handle a lariat, a rifle, and a gun with the best of them. He'd ridden the range with the toughest of the cowboys right here in Oregon and Idaho. And when he first came to Ruby City, he tried a bit of placer mining, soon gave it up and homesteaded some land in this area, raised crops, chickens, hogs, cattle.
Yeah.
Anyway, John or Joe, strictly a loner, kind of became an enigma to the community.
Enigma. That's good.
The rip-roaring town when the cowpokes and the miners got together and
you
the
got
saloons.
Through enigma, but you couldn't say cowpokes.
Cowpokes. Anyway. So little Joe was conspicuous because of his absence.
I see.
And when others were getting drunk and causing disturbance, Monahan was often in his cabin reading by lantern light.
Gee, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah. So little Joe kind of shunned the social practices of the time, cared even less about his physical appearance, always wearing discarded clothes, wore several sizes too big for him, shoes that were kept in place by putting gunny sack rags in them because they were always too big for him. Because that's all he could find to buy or borrow. Anyway, so he's kind of an interesting sight to behold.
Interesting.
Yeah. So little Joe was a hard worker. He took on any and all jobs that came along. He wrangled sheep during shearing time, drove herds from one old range to another, filled in spare time by cowboying, buckarooing, all that stuff. He was civic-minded, served in capacities. In 1898, the directory, along with 21 other citizens, listed him as being a juror. And back then, I think you had to be a man to be a juror. So, anyway, I know we're getting low on time, so we're about done.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the end of this.
Well, with all this activity, very little was known about this little man, although friendly, able to swap a story with the best of them. He had no personal friends, kept to himself. No one knew about his family background. But the postmaster at Rockville, Idaho, recalled that Monahan periodically sent money to an address in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
New York City.
So in winter 1903, a lot of the old-timers in the Owyhee area say that the snows came early, cold. The thermometer dropped to record lows. A lot of cattle perished in the fields, frozen stiff while standing. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's December of that year, and Joe attempted to move his cattle to the Boise River for winter pasture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he never made it. He got to a place called the Malloy Ranch, racked with fever, came down with pneumonia, and Mrs. Malloy cared for Joe the best she could. And in the first week of the new year, Joe died.
Oh, boy. And bet you there was an amazing discovery.
Well, the Malloy boys took the cattle on to winter pasture in the Boise Valley. Now, being there's no funeral parlor in the area, Mrs. Malloy was helping prepare little Joe for a funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And it was not little Joe.
Josephine.
It was Johanna. Johanna.
I see.
Revealed that her name was Johanna Monahan. Her parents had died, and she'd been adopted and raised by Mrs. Catherine Walters from Buffalo, New York. So when she was 14, Johanna left home, went west, assumed the identity of a man, and while playing the role of little Joe, she wrote regularly to her adopted mother, and so that obviously was where she was sending money back to New York City, and that's the story of Charlie Parkhurst and Little Joe.
The Wrangler.
But you know, I was thinking about this too. In the Civil War, there were several women that pretended to be men in the Civil War, and one, I can't remember her name, but she actually, they found out she was a woman, so they used her as a spy.
Yeah.
So she would dress as a woman
and
go in and get information and then come back out. You know, this happened a number of times throughout the West.
You know, I want to say this as delicately as possible, but you know me. They must not have been attractive.
You know, I don't have any pictures. I have a
and probably that's good.
Now, I do have a drawing.
Oh, this ought to be
sensational. Let me show you this. Drawing.
This
says a widely published illustration of Charlie Parker.
Okay.
See that? I mean, that's just a pencil drawing, and it shows one eye kind of not so good.
Yeah.
So that's why one-eyed Charlie.
And, you know, really, when you look at that drawing, you do see a lot of feminine qualities.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, you see long hair, but, you know, no beard, which was unusual.
But that page is all stained with tobacco.
Not for me.
Okay. Well, I'm sure glad you brought these stories up.
Well, I knew I had to get through them one way or another someday.
Oh, interesting. Charlie Parkhurst and Little Joe.
Little Joe.